Hello and welcome to Roll With The Punches. This is episode number 211. I went to say 111 then. I'm a little bit behind time. Episode 211, and I'm your host, Tiffany Cook. Today's guest, I have a small town Victorian lass who took life by the you-know-whats and made it her own. Margie Worrell describes herself as an author, keynote speaker, media commentator, certified coach, podcast host, Forbes columnist, board member, women's advocate, leadership facilitator, adventure traveler, amateur barista, ball juggling / dropping, mother of four. You get the drift. Margie has authored a stack of books with the recurring theme lying around courage, action, bravery, and basically backing yourself. I like Margie, and I have a feeling that you're going to like her too. P.S. team, have you snapped up a ticket to my self-sabotage workshop yet? I feel like you have, because they are selling like hot cakes. Now, I have a lot of conversations with a lot of people looking to do better, know better, and be better. And it seems that many of us, me included, do a whole lot of the same kind of self-destructive, self-sabotaging, soul-destroying, overthinking, mind-numbing shit. And with that revelation, I've decided to run a self-sabotage workshop and use our collective energy to get some clarity around our collective crap. So head over to rollwiththepunches.com.au, check under online programs and book yourself a ticket. They are still early bird until September 22, so if you get in now, you'll get it at a steal of a price. And you know what? If you miss the 22nd, you're still going to get it at a steal of a price. So those tickets don't cost much. And it could be the beginning of the end of self-sabotage for you. Margie Worrell, welcome to Roll With The Punches. How are you?
I am good, Tiff. How are you?
I'm very good. I was just about to tell you, I thought I'd tell you this on air, when I was getting ready to do this Zoom with you, and I sat down in my little Roll With The Punches hoodie like I do, and I was like, remember how stunning Margie looked in the last Zoom? Do you think you want to dress up a little bit?
Well, as you can see, I'm on the tail end of my day right now. I'm not looking too flash.
And honestly, I feel like you're looking as sprightly as anything, so go you. Now, you're in USA, correct?
I certainly am.
How is life over there right now?
All that's gone on with Afghanistan over the week, last week or so, I think is, frankly, it kind of hurts my heart. So, you know, I'm only a few miles from the White House and where all the decisions are being made, I'm literally even closer to the Pentagon. Yeah, you feel like you're right in the thick of it, because a lot of people I meet, they're like working in the military, or, you know, people you know people who've lost people or, you know, fought, etc. So that's, frankly, has a little impact on mood. But if I step up from that in life overall here, it's great. And obviously, compared to all my friends in Melbourne and Sydney who are really doing bloody hard yards right now, I have nothing to complain about.
It's so crazy, isn't it, how differently the whole world has handled this pandemic.
Yeah, it's so true, because last year, you might recall, I was living in Singapore, and so we went through this long lockdown. Everyone in Australia seemed to be having a good time, and everyone in America was having a good time, and it was like, God, we're just locked in, can't talk to anyone, can't meet anyone. It was uber strict. And then I moved to the US in December, and it was the biggest shit show ever on landing here, you know, just middle of winter, pandemic raging. And, of course, they got the vaccine rolled out here pretty, I think they've done an awesome job of it. Of course, some people don't want to get vaccinated, but it's life's just really opened up. So I feel like it's an awesome place to be, honestly, since, you know, May this year or so.
Yeah, I get information fatigue about all of the opinions and the data that we're now exposed to every single day. And I think sometimes that I feel like is more traumatizing than, you know, the actual pandemic itself.
No, I mean, without, you know, just if you kind of look at the psychology, the more you focus on what makes you anxious, the more anxious you become.
Yeah.
And friends in Australia have told me they're so sick of just constantly, what's the count, case count today? What's the case? You know, like, and so there's this, it's almost sort of just become this sort of, I don't know, just obsession almost around something that's obviously usually induces stress or angst or fear or desperation or, and so I think that we do have to set some boundaries wherever we are in the world. I mean, with any news, frankly, on any topic, you know, if you're just immersed in the negative all the time and the fear-mongering, you can actually lose perspective and kind of see that actually there's a whole bigger world going on. And I do think a lot of people kind of been have lost some ability to discern the threat level. Like everything just seems dangerous. It's all just so dangerous. And I mean, I don't know, I've had COVID, my kids all had COVID. You know, so many people I know have had COVID. And so you sort of, you know, obviously in the US, you kind of perhaps get a little bit more inured to, oh yeah, people get COVID than perhaps in Australia.
Yeah, how interesting. I've always been on the side of blissful ignorance for the news and the current, you know, staying in touch with what's going on. Mainly because I just, and what I notice is if I do turn the news, I did this recently, I turned the television on, which I hardly ever turn on, probably indicates that I don't have a life, because if we're locked up for this many months on end and I'm not turning the television on, I clearly work too much. But I turned it on and the news break came on to say what was coming up, and it, like, the music in the background, the words they used and the tone that they spoke in, just, you feel it. You feel it in your nervous system. And I went, this is exactly why I don't tune in and watch the news.
Well, you know, if you think about it, fear sells. I mean, fear wins votes. Mm. Fear sells ad space. Fear gets rating. Like any headlines that incite fear, because it kind of taps into that instinctive desire we have for self-protection. and so good news just doesn't sell as well as bad news. And so that's just how it rolls when we see it in political campaigns. You know, you see it everywhere. And so I think just being mindful of how we can be really vulnerable to that and how easily we can get swept up in it. And frankly, I mean, more power to you for not watching the news very often. I'm sure someone's going to tell you if, you know, the world's about to end tomorrow. Someone will call you and say, hey, Tiff, you know, get into the cave. But so often that what we're consuming, we overconsume. We need to know kind of like the key things. We don't need to watch the same lot of news 20 times in a day.
Yeah. There's been a couple of times I've walked out, so I've gone for a walk and I'll look around at a handful of people and be like, oh, hang on. Some people aren't wearing masks. Is the mask rule over? Because I don't know what the rules are. So I'm here and I'm locked up and I'm doing my thing, and then I'll go and I'll put my mask on, I'll go for a walk. I'm like, oh, how embarrassing. Is it, are we? Oh, no, they're holding coffee cups. It's okay. Like, just trying to figure out where we're at when I'm not tuning in. But I prefer it that way.
Yeah. Well, I said, as long as you know what you really, really need to know, and you don't have to consume too much news to know that. So, it's interesting. It's interesting times that we are living in, Tiff, whether you are in Australia or we're in America or honestly around the world right now. And I guess it's why over the last year or two for me, having to continually just check myself and go, you know, I like to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yeah.
When there's so many people who are so anxious and even struggling mentally with just being positive and optimistic. And I get it. I understand why people are struggling mentally, particularly when we've gone with so much uncertainty and for people whose lives have been and livelihoods utterly decimated by this pandemic. You know, it's been a really, really challenging time.
Mm. It's kind of your jam though, isn't it? Because I was having a look at all of the books that you've written and they are all around courage and bravery and stepping into your power and getting it done.
Yep.
What got you stuck into that? How long's that been your focus?
Yeah. Well, I started down this path, like this whole new career path 20-something years ago, maybe, I mean, really, when I first went back to, say, study psychology, oh, gee, that would be like, you know, moving towards 25 years ago. And but when did I galvanize around this theme of be brave and have courage and put yourself out there? You know, that was probably more like, oh, I'm trying to think, you know, 15, 16 years ago, when I kind of realized, you know, the core of all my work and my passion is helping people be braver with their lives. Mm. And sometimes, Tiff, that is get out of your comfort zone, put yourself out there, pick up the phone, you know, stop living so safely. And other times people are forced out of their comfort zone, and this pandemic has just jolted most people outside of the nice world that they usually live in, not by choice. And how do we be brave when life just knocks us over and we get hit by a curveball? And what does courage mean there? And it means something different. And we're called to step up to the plate and be brave in different ways when suddenly the rug's been pulled out from underneath you, and you find yourself dealing with a situation, whether it's in a relationship, whether it's health, whether it's financial, whether it's career, that you never saw coming and you didn't want and you wouldn't have chosen. And the truth is, I've had a lot of situations like that in my life where I found myself really struggling with something that wasn't as I wanted it to be and I wouldn't have chosen it, and that I realized I could do more than I could handle more than I thought I could. And that I had to be brave even when I didn't necessarily want to be brave. And I think I remember talking to Turiya Pitt a few years ago, and we've met a few times, and she was saying to me, you know, people can look at her and go, wow, you're so amazing, and she is, so I'm not in any way saying Turiya is not an incredible woman. But she said, you know, most people don't know what they're capable of because they've never been tested. Mm. Like, their courage has never been tested. Their resilience has never been tested. And I reckon that a lot of us leave a lot of what we could do on the table of life. Like, we just never really realize what we're capable of because we've never been tested. We've never had to go through, I mean, for her, literally the fire, the absolutely devastating experience. And I know for me, obviously, I've never gone through anything like that, but I've certainly gone through some pretty difficult situations where, you know, you kind of dig deep into yourself and you go, you know what, when really push comes to shove, a lot of us have the ability to handle situations that are far more challenging than we might have ever thought we'd have to deal with.
Why do you think we are so... This sounds like a dumb question, but it kind of, I mean, it is really, but why do you think we love to hear about the people that have overcome things like Turiya Pitt, things that are so enormous? Why aren't we even just looking at the people who are just coping in life, right? Like, so people that are in our circumstances, rather than relate to those and go, oh, I'm just living this average life, but I want to be a little bit braver, but we're not talking to those people. We're going and we want to hear the stories from the people that are in situations that we may never be in and hopefully not.
Yeah, I think everyone's looking for inspiration and some people's stories, either what they've overcome or what they've accomplished or both, are just really deeply inspiring. And I think we all have a deep yearning to be inspired. And yet, you know, I often talk about my dad. So I grew up on a dairy farm in rural East Gippsland, a little place called Nungurna. Most people haven't heard of Nungurna, so I say it's between Lake Sentrance and Meetung, and then, you know, near Bairnsdale where I went to high school, and about 3.5-4 hours southeast of Melbourne. And my dad, I always feel like he's one of the most inspiring people I know, yet he is he typifies the Aussie battler. You know, I left school at 16, spent nearly 50 years milking cows, just made ends meet, didn't ever, you know, build a $1 billion business or, you know, sail around the world, you know, one-handed or climb a mountain or anything like that, but just showed up for life, was a good husband, was a really loving dad, was just a really generous member of his community and still is. Now he's 86, God bless him, and I miss him because it's not easy to get back and see him at the moment. You know, people like that who every time I see, whenever I see Dad, whenever I talk to Dad, he's always like, oh, I'm the richest man in all the world. And it makes me smile because, you know, I think in my first year working out of university, I earned more than my dad had ever earned in his life, you know, which wasn't that much, but I'm just putting it in perspective. And because he just lives in a space of gratitude. He's just always grateful and he feels blessed and he's just a good person who tries to be loving to everybody. And I think stories like that of people who are just good salt of the earth people and good neighbours, we do need to be reminded of those stories too, because, you know, most of us don't write, I mean, yes, I've written books, most of us don't write books, most of us don't climb mountains and, you know, do all these amazing things. And so I do think we need all sorts of stories and people that we can relate to. And in fact, there's interesting research that shows that actually particularly for women and role models for women, that, you know, it's great to put the Michelle Obamas up there or the, I don't know, whichever side of politics you want to look at, Julia Gillard or Julie Bishop or whatever, and you go, oh, aren't they amazing women? They've done all these great things. But or maybe they're not good examples, depend on how you're feeling, what your politics are. But the fact is we need kind of role models that are more accessible as well, and people who, you know, have just managed to overcome, you know, just the challenges that can weigh so many of us down. And so, yeah, and so a lot of my work, kind of coming back to your question and coming up with being brave and why do I write about this and talk about this, and I, you know, when I was 21, 22, I spent a couple of years sort of backpacking around the world, you know, with my little traveler's checks and living off very, very, very little money on a daily basis. And I just crossed different cultures, and in my life since then, I just meet so many awesome, smart, capable people. And I just feel like the biggest thing that holds us back in life from living a more contented, fulfilling life, from having better quality relationships, from just being happier in our lives and thriving more in our lives, is if you dig down far enough and peel back all the layers, is a deep-seated fear of our own inadequacy, of not being good enough, of being uncovered as inadequate in some way, you know. And so that shows up fear of failure, fear of success, fear of rejection, people who have to posture and pretend and be pretentious, you know, and have that. If you peel it back, like, why do you have to put yourself, you know, be so superior? and it's, well, it's because I think deep down you're terrified you're really not that good. So I just think it gets in people's way. And so to me, at the heart of really living a brave life is having the courage to pursue whatever it is that really lights us up and to not settle for what doesn't, and to risk the very failure that we're afraid of.
It's interesting. As you were talking about that, I think back about, I guess, my journey in life, and I would have labelled myself, and even looking back and looking at my actions, I was always a bold, brave, courageous, you know, person. I moved from Tassie to Melbourne, and, you know, I just picked up and made choices and did what I wanted, and, you know, beyond what I deeply thought I was capable of at the time as well. And then at 29, I started boxing. I did a boxing challenge, which I thought, again, just outwardly brave. Yeah, I'll go punch someone in the face. Look at this. This would be amazing. And through that process, I realized that I wasn't ever being brave. I was being terrified. And all of my actions were driven from fear and vulnerability and insecurity and trauma that I'd stuffed so far down and didn't even recognize it. And so then my definition of being brave and courageous completely changed. But what interests me is, how do we learn to be brave? I mean, we can't without self-awareness, because the definition will change. If we're not self-aware, our bravery will change what that looks like and what that means.
Yep. And you're absolutely right. Like, to me, at the core of it is that self-awareness, you know, going, all right, well, taking a look inside ourselves. And of course, sometimes that's very uncomfortable because we have to face some maybe hard truths that we don't like to, like maybe we're partly responsible for our own suffering and misery, because it's much easier to blame your parents or your ex. Start with parents and then move on to ex husbands, wives, partners, etc. And it's we don't want to take ownership of our experience of life. We really want to blame other people. And that's just part of the human condition. And then we look for all the reasons and justifications and evidence why it is all our parents' fault, or our, you know, someone who did cause trauma for us. And of course, that's not to say that that person didn't do wrong. It's just to say that at the end of the day, no one is responsible for our happiness except us.
I was having this really interesting conversation yesterday. I was in a TED Circle group online, and they were discussing a talk on irrationality and asked all these really interesting questions about being irrational and irrational thinking. And, you know, from the beginning of the conversation to the end, it changes your perspective on how you think of things. And it was like, well, if I understand, if I can empathetically and fully understand what that person's experience is, then irrational disappears. Like, I think irrational is not even, I think it's a label that we put on situations we don't understand.
I think, I think it's almost impossible to ever 100% understand somebody else's lived experience, because we have not walked every day in their shoes. We could have enormous empathy for it and have a pretty deep appreciation for it if we've experienced something pretty similar, but we are all different and we all process life's experiences different, and we overlap that with different personalities and all of the things that have brought us to where we are in any moment. I don't think we can ever 100% understand what others may be going through, though we can obviously have an enormous sense of empathy and obviously enormous compassion for it. But I think we ourselves are not all, I mean, we aren't rational creatures, because just look at all the things that we do that you can look at many people. I'm sure you can think of many people. Some of them, you may really love them, but you go, why on earth are you doing that? It just doesn't make sense. But they've got their logic, and then they find all their, you know, reasons to validate that logic. And I think, you know, we all do that. I mean, I'm always kind of mindful. I love it when people challenge my logic, you know, like challenge my thinking here, because sometimes I have thinking and I'm like, I really want you to challenge it. And I think we should all invite people to challenge our thinking. And the more you disagree with someone, the more you should be open to them challenging your thinking, because usually the truth lies somewhere in between the polar opposites, right? I think that in politics, I think that in everything. It's like no one has a monopoly on the truth. But, yeah, we just have so many cognitive biases, and that bias to protect our sense of self and our identity and our ego is a pretty big one, and I think it's one that drives so much divisiveness. I think of people I know who've gone through horrendous relationship breakups, and you would just, when you talk to one side or the other, you would just think there is completely different reality. Like, how can there be such completely different perspectives on what was the same essentially experience of what went wrong or how things unraveled? And so it just goes to show how we don't see the world as it is. We see it as we are.
Yeah. Yes. So true. So true. What grabs me about you is, you know, when I was looking at you and everything you've done, you know, you're a mother of four. You've traveled the world. You've written four books. You're an academic. You're a speaker. You're quite amazing. Like, I'm amazed at that. How amidst motherhood do you achieve all of that?
As I've said many times over the years, by the seat of my pants on a daily basis. And, you know, it's funny. I remember we moved, because this is my second time living in America. And I remember when we moved, we lived in Texas for 4 years, then we lived in, moved to this DC area 16 years ago, actually. And my kids started at this school, and my oldest son, Lockie, he was seven at the time, and Maddie and Ben. And then a year or so later, my son, Matthew, started at this school. Matthew came out of the womb like Bear Grylls, you know, on Red Bull. He's just like a wild child. He's just this fiercely independent, sometimes cantankerous, you know, strong will. Like, we need people like that in the world. Like, he is the warrior. He is a natural born leader. But, man, you know, he was a handful as a toddler. I mean, he was leaving home when he was two. I'm done. You know, he'd pack a can and a can opener. I'm done with this place. And just grab all my husband's frequent flyer cards and say, I'm buying a ticket. I'm going back to Grandpa's farm in Australia. You know, like, that's Matt. And I remember when he started this at this school, and a lot of the mums, they were either only kids or oldest kids, and he's the fourth child. And, you know, our family's always been, I was never like a perfectionist mum. I just kind of let the kids, you know, always gave them a bit of leash to sort of be who they are and be rambunctious. And I just remember all the mothers looking at me like, does she not have any, because he was having a massive tantrum, and, you know, and I just remember thinking, I know they're looking at me going, I think she calls herself a coach, but look, seriously, she can't even control her children. And it wasn't that they said it, but I swear to God, I know they were thinking it, because their kids all lined up perfectly and my child's being, you know, crazy wild child. But I think over the years as a parent, I've always done, I was a big sister of seven, and I think that's a massive, the older I get, the more I realise how that much impacted me, because growing up on a dairy farm, big sister of seven, you sort of learn that life's a bit messy around the edges. It's always a bit chaotic. It's always a bit dirty and messy. You know, like, nothing's ever ordered and controlled. And so as a mum, I remember when I had Lachlan, someone said, you know, you are the way with him, the way most people are with their second or third child. I just started with, like, picking up their dummy off the ground when it was covered in dirt, when he's, like, you know, by 3 weeks old. You know, like, I kind of started parenting like that. So the bar could only get lower and before he started low. So I think a key to part of that is I didn't set the bar as high as a lot of people these days set the bar. Like, my kids didn't always look perfectly dressed, and I was the opposite of a helicopter mother. As my kids learned by about the age of 12, you know, if there's something that has to get done, they better be on top of it, because don't expect mum to know what your school project is, or to have gone and got the supplies, you know. They really had to manage me. Mum, you have to go and buy this for me. Write it on a list. Stick it. Where do you want me to put this for you? I'm like, okay. Which shocked and horrified a lot of fellow parents who just would do up their kids' school projects, or all of them for them. Like, I never did my kids' school projects. And, of course, they're really now extremely self-reliant, independent, resilient, adaptable kids.
Did you parent any of them differently? Was there a point in time where your parenting style changed?
I don't think so. I think, obviously, as they're getting older, I mean, but... When Lachlan was like 12 or 13, we didn't swear in the house. And by the time Matthew's 12 or 13, we were just like, you know, we'd have given up on that. So, you know, the bar just kept getting lowered. But that would be mainly it. But, you know, I think also, Tiff, I have always done everything fast. People still laugh at me and they go, Mikey, you just make sandwiches fast, you cook dinner fast. Like, I put my makeup on fast. You know, I always do things kind of fast and a bit messy. You know, in a kitchen, I can whip up a big meal pretty fast, but the place looks like a bomb hit it. I am not good with details. So I don't know. I think what I would say is I've always been really intentional with my time. Like, I really get out of bed early and I get up and I exercise first thing in the morning so it's done by 7 a.m. sort of thing. You know, I've never spent time. I don't read glossy mags except waiting at the doctor's, which I pretty much never go to. So a lot of things that I think a lot of people spend a lot of time on that can be fluffy time wasters, I've always been really mindful not to kind of be wasteful of time. And I do think you fill the amount of time you have available.
And I remember when I took on my PhD, my husband was like, you said you wanted to write another book and you want to do a PhD. And I was like, I just know I'll fit it in if I have to fit it in. You know, you just spend less time laying around watching movies on a weekend or something. So I've kind of fit a lot of things into the cracks of life. And I think actually we often can do a lot more when we're willing to just, like my first book, actually, I remember I had 4 kids under 7 and I used to just do like an hour a day when they were having a nap. Literally just, or I'd lock them in their rooms and just, I just needed an hour a day. So I would just like, I set the bar low. It was sort of like, let me just do something, like one little bit every day. And so I think probably a whole lot of different strategies have helped me do all those things. And just also just as I juggled a lot of balls, I dropped a lot of balls. But I think it's okay to drop the odd ball. I'd rather be dropping the odd ball than trying to have every ball be perfect and do everything perfectly. But
do you feel like it changed you as a person after having kids, or because you grew up with so many younger siblings, you kind of knew that environment? Like I have one brother, he's 7 years older. I very much feel like an only child. I've lived by myself 30 years, haven't got kids. So when I look at your ecosystem, I'm blown away, because I'm like, I know how much it takes me to do the work I'm doing and achieve what I'm achieving. And I'm a bit like you, like I do things fast, I do things messy, I get a lot in my time. And then I go, how's she done that and raised a family and done a PhD?
I'm not a champion kickboxer or boxer or whatever the heck you are. I don't have a six pack, nor have I ever had one. Ever, never, ever, never, ever, ever, never. I do look at women who have these awesome bodies and I go, I really like that body. I'm just not willing to do more than about 25 minutes at the gym at a time. So, you know, it's just, there's trade-offs, right? There's always something that you give and take around the edges. And, yeah, I mean, obviously I think coming from that big family environment, it did make it easier for me. I see people get so stressed living in America, but I actually lived in Bayside, Melbourne, when I moved. I was back there living there for 5 years from 2012 to 2017. I lived in, and I always kind of know I get shit when I say it. I lived in Brighton. And yes, I know. I got enough from my family. Oh, Brighton. And so I lived in Brighton. And actually, it's a really lovely suburb to live in. And, but you know, you meet people in any more affluent suburb who stress out about the dumbest things. Like they just stress out about really dumb stuff. And I say dumb stuff, I'm like, just stuff that really, if you stepped back and thought about it in the scheme of life, is so petty, is so superficial, so doesn't matter. I don't know, just being able to do that. And I think there's something about being raised in an environment where there's not affluence, there's not money. And I never had designer clothes. That, you know, I've always been really intentional not to get pulled into all of the, you know, buying the right cheese from the right shop sort of thing, or getting my kids from the right designer kids clothing store, which pretty much never happened. Tajay was my friend, or hand-me-downs were great too. So I just didn't get pulled into a lot of that stuff. And I think even over the years, as I have become more affluent, raising out my kids, I actually found it like a challenge. When you have more money, I actually think it actually adds more responsibility as a parent to make sure your kids appreciate what they have. I could afford to buy my kids any sneakers they wanted. And so I very intentionally, I'm like, I'm not buying you that brand. You can get the, you know, Big W brand of Uggs. You know what? Well, I'm not spending that kind of money on that, because that's ridiculous. You know, you're going to grow out of them, or you're not going to value them. So I used to tell the kids, it was very intentional. And my daughter's 22 now. And she says, you know, Mum, I used to be kind of mad at you that you wouldn't get me some of the stuff that some of the other girls had. But now I'm really grateful that you taught me those lessons. And so, yeah, and my mum couldn't afford to get me that stuff, but I still look back and I appreciate sort of the values that I was raised in, and I try hard to impart them in my own parenting with my kids.
I relate to that so much. I grew up in Tassie and I you know, no one gave me anything either. So it was, I had to save for a car, I had to save to move over here, I had to save for everything. But the appreciation you get when you own something, and you're like, and I remember some, you know, coming over here, and I would hear of kids that they're getting a Mercedes for their first car from their parents that they didn't put a dollar down for. And I was like, part of me is a little bit envious, but part of me is kind of heartbroken that you'll never get that, the feeling that I got, that I've worked for this, that I've made this happen, which I think is important. Mm. I live in Elwood now, so I get the Brighton thing. Have you watched, do you follow a guy called Jimmy Rees on Instagram? All right,
Yes. A few friends have sent me some of his videos where so he's talking brilliant. States. He looks up at New South Wales and down at Tasmania. Yes, I did see it. And he did have the Sydney lot as the latte group, I think. Anyway, I think I've seen him portray Sydney siders to me a little bit Melbourne-like or a bit Brighton-like. But, yes, I did hear early in the pandemic there was some Brighton ladies complaining about, I don't know, they couldn't get their brand of coffee within a 5K limit or something, and it was I think they were, you know, there was a emotional trauma case there that they thought they might make.
And we had a Karen, like a literal Karen. Karen's a term now. I mean, Karen's always been a term, but there was a lady that I can't even remember what she did, but she was from Brighton, and she was like, I've walked every street. They had her on the news. I've walked every street in Brighton. So that did the rounds about Karen walking
I actually did see that because I have some friends in Brighton. So, of course, we all have, and I did used to walk a lot of streets in Brighton. But
it could have been you, Margie.
When you've got the beautiful beach nearby, you're like, you know what, you really don't have too much to complain about. So I am mindful of not just first world problems, but kind of, you know, 1% country club problems. It's like, oh, yes, my golf set is, you know, not doing too well. So, yeah, but you know what, it's easy to get pulled into that if you don't have something to benchmark your life experience against. If all you've ever known is affluence, then you do complain when, you know, your, I don't know, Tiffany bracelet breaks or something. I don't know. Like, you just don't have something to compare it to. And I think I've been really intentional with even our kids. And my kids, let's face it, they're privileged, as are many kids that I know. You know, they've just grown up without ever knowing what it is to not know if their parents are going to be able to pay the rent or, you know, and we've taken them on a lot of trips actually. But I've loved, like, we've gone to Nepal and the Philippines and Myanmar and countries, Vietnam and Cambodia and all of that. And I you know, it's affluent to be able to afford to do that. I get that. I feel very, very blessed that we've been able to give our kids that experience. But for me, we've never done 5-star resorts. I love the freaking train sleeping on a hard thing in Vietnam, and it's only 5'6", and the guys are all having to have their legs curled up, because I just love them having those experiences and seeing this is how 99% of the world lives, and that was our hardship, you know. So I just think it's so important. And my parents, actually, I grew up very Catholic. There was an ethos in our family of to he who much is given, much is expected. And, you know, my dad did never have a lot of material wealth to give away, but could give his time away or could take people in if they were doing it tough, as we did numerous times. But, yeah, that's part of what drives me, Tiff, is I just feel really blessed in life. And, yes, have I been brave? I have been brave. I've been brave lots of times, but I also feel really, really blessed. And I really feel like a sense of calling and obligation to how can I use my gifts and my good fortune to help other people so that they can share their gifts and their good fortune.
I love that. How did the kids feel about up and moving, especially on this last move when they're a bit older? Like, have they always been on board with the moving around, or have they found that unsettling?
Both. Yeah. Both is definitely true. I definitely weren't on board with the move before this one, which was to Singapore. That was really actually extremely upsetting.
Yeah.
My husband worked for a company for nearly 30 years, and they ultimately really completely, frankly, screwed our family around. Like they said, oh, we promised to move you here. And people in high places made promises and then it wasn't convenient for them. And so we ended up with our kids scattered over a couple of continents for a few years. So, yeah, so when we were in Australia, we were told we'd move back to the United States. And my oldest, Lockie, said, well, if you're going to move back, I really want to go back there to board because I really want. So we sent him back to boarding school. We ended up, then my husband's company said, oh, we changed our mind. We want to send you to Singapore. And I was like, what the? And we ended up in Singapore with two kids and two in America. And it was really messy, to be honest, for a good few years. So I can tell you that my kids will say they've had a pretty disruptive time in the last, but our family's had a lot of disruption in the last few years. And I think, I mean, for me, a lesson is be very careful trusting people in high places and companies to keep their word.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them really just do what works for them and don't really care about honouring promises, which had a massive impact on our family. So I'm very happy my husband's left that company now.
Huge decisions to make. Like, I'm just thinking about that. Huge decisions to, for the sake of a career or a job, especially when it's a whole family. It's not just one person. So as a person, he has to come home and go, hey, this thing that I do for my job, like we're going to have to up and leave and plant ourselves in a whole different place. Like, that's huge.
Yeah, it is huge. And I know some people would say, oh, I would never do that. Like, we could have just gone back to Melbourne and stayed in Melbourne, which is where we moved in 2012. And I know, I think my family would have loved it if we'd done that. having also lived in the US for 11 years and for me having lived around and travelled around the world a lot, I love Australia and I'll always call Australia home, but I also feel like there's this great big world and I really want to experience life outside Australia and I want my kids to have that experience too. And if they want to go back there one day, they certainly can. But for them, the opportunity to go to college, go to university in America, which I thought would be a really awesome experience for them. I think it's a much more kind of whole, it's a bigger in versus Australia. Like in America, you live at your college, everyone's moved out of home, you're there with thousands of people and it's a much more social and a lot of people's friendships in life are really forged during those years there versus living at home and catching the train into uni twice a week sort of thing. So obviously that's something that not everyone has the opportunity to do, but my kids, we wanted to give them that opportunity and they were really, really happy to do that. So, and I realise even as I say this to you, it sounds, I sense some people would be listening going, well, that's all right for her. That's really expensive. And I get it. It is. It's really expensive, but we've put a pretty much prioritised that as a big thing for us to spend our money on. And my kids.
But like you said, like when people listen that and they might say that, like you didn't come from affluence. You didn't come from money. So to acknowledge that is huge and say, well, yeah, it costs a lot of money. I'm really privileged, but you did the work. You got there.
Yeah. And to me, it's like the most important things for me to do for our kids was obviously having a loving home, but to see the world and experience, you know, places they would maybe never live, but also, you know, just giving them as great an education as we could. And then they're on their own. Like, I mean, believe me, I have no desire to be leaving my children a fortune. My husband and I are about to go and spend it all once we stop paying tuition. But that's been a big priority for us. And it's just been something we've valued. Yeah, so it's funny, I have never talked about this on a podcast before and I feel I've always been mindful that there's people in Australia going, oh, why would you do that? Why would you go to America? But, yeah, and for me and my work also, Tiff, obviously the US is, what, 330 million people and opportunities for me to amplify what I do on a scale is just far bigger than in Australia.
How does that work? Like with how connected we are online at the moment, what are the opportunities that open up when you place yourself there?
Yeah, right now, honestly, you could obviously be living on planet, you know, I could be on Mars or I could be living in, you know, outback Timbuktu or whatever, and it wouldn't really make much difference as long as you've got a good Wi-Fi. But Yeah, being in the US, like I literally live across the river from Washington, D.C. in a gorgeous area called Old Town Alexandria. It's really pretty. I live in a beautiful 240-year-old home. And
wow.
But living here, like you get to meet people who are doing pretty big things. So I get to connect and build relationships with people who are making decisions that really change the world. And so, you know, I've done work with NASA and the United Nations, and, you know, you get to coach people who are running organizations that have hundreds of thousands of people, or who are making policy decisions, or who are running for political office, you know. And so I have friends who have run for US president, and you just get to meet people because you're in that orbit where you are mixing with them socially, you know, and so the degrees of separation goes right down. And I just, my ability to support and champion causes and support and champion people who are doing things that I might never do myself, that's exciting and it's rewarding. And I really value those opportunities.
Oh, I love that. That's gorgeous. Is the line for you between work and fun blurred? Like, do you have fun outside? What do you love out? What lights you up when outside work? Or do you really just love what you do and kind of blur that line pretty heavily?
Oh, look, I love what I do. Absolutely love what I do. I love it a lot more when I'm not in pandemics because I do what I do because I love people. Yeah. I love people. I love being around people. I am a strong E on the extrovert scale. And so I have found it definitely really hard through the pandemic. It was in the beginning, it was fine, but frankly, I'm actually doing my first speech on a stage in a room full of people since March last year in 3 weeks' time, 3 weeks today. And I can't freaking wait. I'm going to kiss the stage. You know, I've really missed just being in rooms with people. So that for me is incredibly rewarding. I run Live Brave Women's Weekends, which I've started running when I was living in Australia, and probably the most soul-satisfying thing that I do. I mean, I love that. But do what I do for fun. Honestly, I love social. I love going to parties. I love socializing. I love hosting people for drinks. I love going out to wine bars. I also love hiking. Love hiking in gorgeous places. I do a lot of walking. I really enjoy just going off to national parks or hiked around Mont Blanc. We took our kids up Kilimanjaro. You know, I just enjoy that too. But, yeah, just being with people and being in nature, they're my favourite things. I don't have any hobbies like, you know, I'm not a stamp collector or, you know, or pottery, and I don't play a sport. I'm not a sporty spice.
Well, I'm disappointed you're not a stamp collector. I had you definitely pinned as a stamp collector.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's funny. When I moved to Dallas, Texas, God bless my heart, 20 years ago, we moved in October 2001, just after 9/11, and I remember meeting some of the women in my local area, and I felt like I'd landed on Mars, and I was living in this suburb that in hindsight was not a good idea, but we followed someone's advice, didn't know any better, and ended up in this very vanilla-y Stepford wifey suburb. And it had the Starbucks and not much else. And I had three tiny kids. And I remember meeting women. I got invited to bunco nights, which wasn't my thing. And then I was like, oh, my God, do you scrapbook? And I was like, what the hell is scrapbook? I'd never, ever heard of scrapbooking. Oh. And I went to someone's house to scrapbook, and I was like, dear God, you know. Why did I work a lot? Because frankly, I would rather work than scrapbook or do bunco, and I'm not a bridge player. And so many times over the years when people say, do you want to join my tennis group? It's just like, honestly, no, I really don't want to do that. But I'm happy to get a glass of wine, you know.
I love it. What's bunco?
It's some game. I don't know, Google it. I did it one night. And I decided, I actually lived in Papua New Guinea for 3 years. And I remember when I first got to PNG, all the other wives of my husband's company, none of them worked. And I did line up a job. And I had the first week not working. And I remember I got taken around to do the expat wife thing. And I remember the one of the women saying to me, oh, my God, I'm going to give you 3 months working, because you're going to realize after your week with us that it's so much more fun not working. So I went to all these mahjongs and afternoon teas, and honestly, by day four, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to start working. And I never once, ever, even after I was in an armed robbery, I had to end up with a gun at my head and everything else. And my husband's like, you know, honey, if you don't want to work, and I'm like, honestly, the thought of not working, I would rather work than do card games and play mahjong. And it's just, it clearly is my personality, Tiff, because I enjoy working.
Yeah, I would. I think I would be the same. Armed robbery.
Yeah.
Was that terrifying?
Yeah, it was. It was pretty terrifying because I was actually like 19 weeks pregnant with my first baby at the time. Oh. And these guys stormed into our office, and I was in the boss's office having a coffee with a client before we closed the office for 2 weeks the next day for Christmas. And he had a sawn-off shotgun. They're called rascals up there. And he put it at my forehead and jammed it up against me and said, open the safe, Mrs. Open the safe, Mrs. And I was like, I don't know how to open the safe. And I really didn't know how to open the safe because they thought the cash for the local employees would be in it. Anyway, I mean, I don't want to kind of overwork the story here, but I ended up on the ground and his hand went up between my legs. And I just remember thinking, oh God, because gang rape is extremely prevalent. It's quite prevalent there. And only the week before, a New Zealand woman had been, her car had broken down and she'd been taken back to one of their villages and raped by 18 men. And I just remember thinking, dear God, don't let them take me with them. And I remember lying there as his hand was up between my thighs and thinking, oh God. And I had, my client was next to me and I was holding his hand. It was Bruce Muller, big, tall, bougainvillean guy, and I've never held a man's hand so hard in my life before then or since. And they got the cash from the general manager's office. I didn't even know where it was, and they left. And then, 10 days later, I found out that the baby I was carrying had died, which they think was unrelated but just seemed like a pretty awful coincidence. Because I was never physically hurt. But, yeah, it was pretty traumatic. But even then, I mean, I flew to Australia the next day. But even then when I came back, people were like, you're going to go back to work, because it had happened in our office. I was like, I'd rather go back to work and play.
Oh, my God. That story gave me goosebumps and almost made me cry. That is so terrifying.
Pretty awful. It was pretty awful. But you know, Tiff, all of us have shit to deal with in life.
Yeah.
And all of us have experiences that are hard, and that was a pretty hard one. Like, it really knocked, pulled the rug out from underneath me. Like, I just, one, never thought I would have a miscarriage. I ended up having five. And two, never thought, even though I know PNG is a dangerous place, never thought that I would be in an armed robbery. I just thought it would happen to, just, you knew this stuff happened. I just didn't think it would happen to me. But it did happen to me. Wow. And so I share that story, which I wasn't planning to share, but I share that story with you because, you know, one, to highlight that I really don't like playing mahjong, and two, because we can easily look at other people and go, they've had life easy. And the fact is, all of us are going to have something happen at some point in our life, and it's going to just knock us for six. And, you know, and I wrote about this in You've Got This, my most recent book. And as I wrote in You've Got This, you know, our power is in how we choose to respond when life knocks us down. We all get knocked out. But taking 100% ownership for how you respond, and do not become a victim to the circumstances. Don't become a victim to your failures. Don't become a victim to other people who may have treated you like shit. Don't be a victim to an event that has happened. It's in the past. And really decide how you will define yourself. And to me, that's what empowerment is all about. You know, you deciding how you will show up in the world, regardless of everything that you're dealing with, pandemics and crappy people and everything else. And I think that, and then just really daring to live the biggest life you can imagine. And if that takes you away from your family, as mine has, my extended family, all the Kleinitzes that I love, then that's, sometimes that's just, you know, part of the trade-off we have to make. I mean, of course, not everyone wants to go and live on the other side of the world. I'm not even encouraging it. I'm just saying that sometimes for us to really live the life we feel called to live, we have to make trade-offs. Yeah, you just have to ask yourself, is what you're getting from the life you're living right now worth what you're giving up?
Oh, you are incredibly inspiring. I've loved, loved, loved talking to you. Thank you so much. Where can my listeners follow you and get their hands on your books? And more to the point, where can I get my hands on your books is what I'm really asking.
Yeah, well, You've Got This, which is the one I think people would really value as a starting point to read, though I would recommend Brave and I'd recommend Make Your Mark and my other books too. But, I mean, you can get them all online, Booktopia and what have you, but I would just encourage people to go to my website, margiewarrell.com. There's links to all my books there too, but I encourage people, please just connect with me on social media, and I've got my own Live Brave podcast. And then one day I'm really hoping to run a Live Brave weekend for women back in Australia. Once the borders, you know, I don't have to spend 2 weeks in a hotel doing quarantine and we can all just get together and don't have to worry about life being cancelled. I would love the women to just, you can get onto my website or go to livebraveweekend.com and register your interest. And hopefully one day we'll be able to do that when I can get foot on terra firma down under again.
That will be amazing. Well, we'll keep our eyes peeled for that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tiff.
Thanks for tuning in to Roll With The Punches with me, your host, Tiffany Cook. Don't forget to subscribe, and if you're an Apple Podcast user, drop us a rating and review. Because if I know what content is landing best with you, then I'll make sure I keep hitting the mark. To stay up to date with all of my movements, upcoming events, training and mentoring programs, or to book me to speak at your event, then head over to my website at www.rollwiththepunches.com.au and be sure to connect with me on all the usual social platforms. Thanks for joining us.